are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody, and welcome into the Locked On NBA Podcast Friday edition. I'm your host, Adam Mattis. Today, Nick Engstad has the night off, but we found a nice replacement for him. Host of the Locked On Pacers podcast, it's Tony East. Tony, how you doing?
Thrilled to be here. Fun night in the NBA. Love watching the pesky Thunder make my night every time they play the Lakers. So lots of fun action to get to today.
They salvaged the night, I would say. I don't know if it was a fun night in the NBA, but they salvaged it for me and gave me some great shade. It's always fun when the Lakers completely trip over their own feet, and that's what happened tonight. We'll get into that game as well as all of the other games here coming up. But first, this episode of Locked On is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than a place to get tasty food and affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. Tony, we start on a significant downer, because the breaking news today, we've been waiting on this. We got reports several weeks back that there was a bombshell report that was going to be dropped on Suns owner Robert Sarver. We thought it was going to be dropped several weeks ago. It seems that there was a little bit of a delay. I'm no doubt ESPN, a league partner, vetting the story and I'm sure working with the league to make sure they got all of the details, at least that they had their sources in order. But that story dropped today. Robert Sarver, according to the report by Baxter Holmes, multiple instances of using the N-word casually in conversation with staff, even with players and coaches. There were awkward stories about Robert Sarver sharing images of his wife wearing a Suns bikini, making inappropriate comments to female staff members. He even pantsed a 25-year-old account executive in front of 60 employees, humiliating the 25-year-old employee. And then there was countless stories in there of employees feeling harassed, depressed, and even suicidal. You knew this story was coming, Tony, when you read it today. What was your initial thoughts?
Yeah, the line that always was in the story a lot, that always stood out to me, was just the toxic culture line that was in there so much. That was what so many Suns employees sort of described their experience working in Phoenix as. Some even on the record, current Toronto assistant coach Earl Watson, then Phoenix Suns head coach, numerous poor interactions with Sarver, some involving racist words, like you said, and some involving Sarver overstepping his boundaries, saying things he shouldn't, just in general as your boss. And that extends to every part of the Suns, it sounds like, not just the basketball operations part. But he even admitted, Sarver, via his representation in the story, the pantsing story, he did that in front of a crowd of people. You know, that's not
one of the few stories he actually confirmed so far. I mean, he's denying almost everything else. And it was a long article of stories and anecdotes. But that was one he did sort of fess up to.
Yeah, it's rare to me, at least, that, you know, someone in older age would just have one incident like that. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
That's not how people are, right? So it's just awful for the Suns that people had to go through this. And, you know, the NBA is doing their investigation now, though. I'm sure they'll interview everybody. Baxter Holmes went through. He said it was 70-something people he interviewed. So that will be presumably a lengthy investigation from the league. But, just assuming, you know, that people are recounting true stories, and again, if Sarver himself is confirming some, it's gonna be fascinating to see how this turns out. But he seems like Sarver not necessarily the best person to work for, and Suns are gonna have to pick up the pieces along the way. Now,
I think you can go even further. You know, assuming these allegations are true, or even a portion of them are true, to say not the most fun person to work for is quite an understatement. One of the pretty
awful.
I mean, all of the stories, you know, in there, in some form or fashion, featured manipulation. You know, a guy obviously with extreme power, wielding that power over his subordinates. And you just, whether it was the racism, the misogyny, or just the meddling in team events and team affairs, making fun of players, trying to correct coaches and screaming at coaches in the locker room in front of other players, all of that stuff, they all had the same theme to them, which was, you know, him trying to wield his power as the owner and somebody with absolute power over decision making, trying to use that just to really humiliate people and belittle people and do different things. So you take it all together, all of the many crimes, and they have that one through thread. But Tony, the thing I think about when I read this report, everybody knew, you know, when you go back to Donald Sterling, everybody knew Donald Sterling was not a good guy. They knew that these stories were there, but there wasn't a smoking gun with Robert Sarver. But until there was, of course, the videotape, that is what when that got released, that's when Adam Silver banned Donald Sterling for life. In this story, you know, I don't know if there is a smoking gun there. We'll find out. The NBA, I'm sure, is going to do a lengthy investigation, and maybe that's all they needed was an accusation like this so that they could really dig in and start to maybe open up emails or interview people and see. But I do worry, as this one goes in, that is there as much of a smoking gun incident like there was with the Clippers, where there's, aha, we got you on tape doing the thing that we all knew you were doing.
Yeah, and even remember Bruce Levinson with the Hawks earlier this decade sent an insensitive email, and you know, same kind of deal with Sterling, where once they had the physical evidence or the actual evidence, the investigation speeds up or is a little easier, and the NBA can actually step in and take action. So it will certainly be, you know, the NBA has resources beyond anything we could imagine to do something like this, and they have records of staffers that maybe even ESPN can't get to. So hopefully they can vet every single story and interview everyone involved with every party to just make sure they're on top of every single accusation in this, and make sure they know the full scope of things, because like you said, misogyny, racism, being controlled.
It was everything. Like, he really hit the whole bingo card of everything.
Yeah, everything. I mean, reading the article, we could talk for forever on this. Just the investigation has so much to uncover, and if they can get a smoking gun like that, it'll be fascinating to see what Sarver's future actually holds with that Suns team.
There's so many moments in that article that made you want to shake your head, just the little details or little stories. But one of the things that kind of stuck out to me at the end, you know, the Phoenix Suns just went to the NBA Finals this last year, and you had staffers saying it was a low point in many ways, that they weren't even able to enjoy sort of this run, that historic run that they went on. That's how toxic the culture, it sounds like, is around Phoenix. So that's obviously a story. And that was a story hanging over the heads of Phoenix today as they played host to the Houston Rockets, as we segue now into covering some of the games that happened tonight. So this report, I'm sure all the Phoenix Suns players knew it was coming. Everybody kind of saw this was coming. And I'm sure some of the anecdotes that were shared in here were things they had either heard or had firsthand witness to.
Yeah, Adam, so after the game, we had Devin Booker commenting on Earl Watson, the head coach who is directly quoted in the story, right, saying, that's my guy, right?
Right.
Going to bat for the coach who's directly named in the story is certainly, again, for a player still on the team owned by Sarver, a fascinating quote after the game as well.
Very fascinating. So they go into this game, and I'll be honest, you know, Houston Rockets are not a very good team. In fact, this was my first chance watching them start to finish. They were an AAU-esque style of play to them, very disorganized. And this is no, you know, knock on the team, organization, coaching staff. That they've got a lot of young guys, and they've got young guys who their MO, you know, Kevin Porter Jr., you've got, you know, Jalen Green, you've got guys, even Christian Wood, that like to play a little bit of one-on-one. So they were a disorganized team. This was a lifeless game for a majority of it. I thought when JaVale McGee came in the third quarter, he was the first guy to inject some energy and life into the Phoenix Suns crowd and to the Phoenix Suns team. Phoenix went on a run, and they never looked back in that third quarter. But this was an ugly game. Anything stick out to you?
Yeah, all my notes about the Rockets are negative, except for about Christian Wood, who I continue to just, every time I watch Houston, I'm fascinated by him. I mean, it seems like he would have a pretty important role on a lot of teams. He's a very good player. They played the Suns basically even with him on the court, and the Rockets lost by double digits in this game. He was really good, especially in the second quarter when the Rockets were ahead, actually, going into halftime. He was really good. But my Rockets notes a lot of the time entail that Kevin Porter Jr. is more off-ball guard than on-ball guard, and that kind of makes their offense just so awkward to me at times. He can't really create for other people, so it feels like a lot of their possessions are your turn, my turn, and that's kind of the consequence of having a young team full of guys learning how to create, how to read the game and stuff, but it makes it tough for them to really grow and get guys into good positions to succeed with the way he plays when he's your starting point guard.
You go to the other side and look at Phoenix, you know, they get the win tonight. Houston, not a very good team, but they get the win tonight and go to 4-3, 3-2 at home. They have not been quite as impressive as I think a lot of people expected for them being a mostly healthy team coming off of that finals run. What have you seen out of them, and how do you analyze their season so far?
Yeah, Mikal Bridges is, you know, he has always been an awesome piece for them, but his step forward this season has been helpful for them because they've struggled. Like you said, they just got over 500 for the first time this season today, and they needed a big Booker performance to do it. You know, I wonder if there's finals fatigue for a lot of these teams. Like, the team that loses the finals comes out and struggles. And I think there's a thing in the NFL where, like, you lose the Super Bowl and you come out slow,
right,
too. But yeah, so that you're in Denver. You know, the Broncos had that following season after that Seahawks Super Bowl that was not very fun, right? So
they were terrible, though. That wasn't like a hangover season. That was a we are no longer good season.
You know, Booker really whipped them into shape in the third quarter in this game, and then showed like, oh yeah, we're Phoenix. We're actually good when things are clicking. So I think they'll be fine. Some bad shooting nights early in the season for a lot of these guys too. Jay Crowder, Chris Paul especially has had some rough nights so far. Campaign's had some rough nights. So I think they'll click and get it together. Just some fatigue, you know, coming in, coasting a little bit after making the finals. Makes some sense to me.
Devin Booker at 28% from three entering. He's one of a long list of players who have kind of not found their shots early in the season. So as unimpressive as they are, still a winning record at 4-3 and him with a lot of area to grow. On the other side, though, we do have a ton of games. We've got Utah, Atlanta, Boston, Miami. Boston might be the most interesting team of the night, even if there was a blowout win. And then, as we mentioned, the Thunder going to Los Angeles and down the Lakers, 107-104. We'll get to all those games in segment two.
Yeah, but first, this episode of Locked On NBA is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving community since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect, a place where classmates can meet up for a study group, knowing they'll have dependable Wi-Fi and an endless supply of fries and McFlurries. Win or lose, it's a place where teammates, competitors, and the home team or away team can come to recharge. When I was growing up, I would always go there after some of my Little League baseball games with my dad or go with my mom to get McFlurries late at night. If I did well on a test or something in school, just a lot of positive experiences there. So you should also head over to your local McDonald's to refuel and reconnect. Maybe one day we can watch some NBA games there and have a watch party. McDonald's, ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. Let's also talk about Calm really quickly, because you know what makes LeBron James King James? It's sleep. That's right. Sleep is his superpower, and Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, and they've teamed up with LeBron to help activate the power of sleep. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in the body. You don't have to be a world champion to learn how to train it. Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, reduce your stress, and perform at your best. Just like King James for LeBron, sleep is a critical part of his mental fitness routine. As he says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. From the sound of the rain falling on leaves to bedtime sleep stories, Calm puts me to sleep within minutes. So if you head to calm.com/lockdownnba, for a limited time, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium subscription. With Calm, you have access to the nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more. Again, for a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron James in using Calm and get a 40% discount on a Calm premium subscription. Calm.com/lockdownnba. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/lockdownnba. That's calm.com/lockdownnba.
Back here on the Locked On NBA Podcast Friday edition, let's go around the association, Tony, and look at all the games that happened tonight. We'll start with Philadelphia beating the Pistons. Philadelphia on a second night of a back-to-back. They are facing some adversity here. COVID protocols hit the team. They played tonight with just eight guys on the second night of a back-to-back. I mean, look, it's the Detroit Pistons, not exactly one of the best teams in the East, but nonetheless, it took a lot out of him to get this one. Seth Curry is shooting 53% from three on the season. He had 23 tonight. What stood out to you about this one?
Yeah, Seth Curry was going to be one of my takeaways. He's just been absolutely marvelous for Philly since they got him. That Josh Richardson trade just looks unbelievably good in retrospect for this organization. And another guy that continues to help them a lot is Georges Niang, coming off their second unit.
I like him, man. I'm a Niang fan.
Providing some spacing, and he's always been a good shooter, you know, in Utah, but now with Philly putting the ball on the floor a little more, just putting pressure on the rim in a way that makes the defense bend, he's been really valuable for them. So obviously Embiid dominates and pulls guys in, although not as much dominance.
Did he?
I was going to say,
default mode there. Here's an interesting thing that happened in this one.
Typically, Embiid dominates, but yes, not tonight.
Yes, typically he does. Tonight, the second night of a back-to-back, Embiid, I don't know if you noticed, Tony, he's like playing when usually he would not play this year. I think he is gunning for an MVP. I think he wants that MVP very bad. He knows that he's got to play more games. That's a big knock on him. He plays tonight, looked pretty tired. He was actually a -9 in this game. Andre Drummond, wow. Former Piston, a +20 tonight, carrying the 76ers from the center position tonight. So that was one of my big notes. But here's my favorite note of the night. Cade Cunningham made his first NBA three-pointer. It was a half-court heave at the buzzer, at the halftime buzzer. He started 0 of 18 from three. He gets his first three, and it's a half-court heave.
Unforgettable. You know, I love those stories. You'll never forget your first three if it's a half-court heave against the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah, I mean, he has certainly struggled since starting, but he's coming off an injury. He's a rookie. I mean, it's expected for him.
plenty of excuses. The Celtics, speaking of excuses, they had a really rough start to the season. I don't know if you have been paying attention to the story, but the Celtics had a somewhat ad hoc team dinner before going to Orlando yesterday. It was described as emotional, maybe not necessarily productive. Sometimes you have these like team only or players only meetings and it's like, okay, it sparks you. But even though everybody said it was awkward and emotional and maybe not great, they are 2-0 since that meeting, getting a win against Orlando last night. And then, of course, tonight, beating the Miami Heat in dominant fashion. This is the first time, I have a crazy stat here, the first time since 2018 that a team has held consecutive opponents under 80 points.
That was my notes.
The Boston Celtics just did that.
That was my notes. I mean, defense will certainly turn you around if you can hold two teams in a row under 80. Holding the Magic under 80. Okay, you held the Magic under 80. Holding Miami under 80, now we're talking. Now we're actually looking at a very impressive performance.
Yeah, that was pretty great. 30-5 run in the second quarter. In fact, the second quarter was a 33-9 beatdown by the Celtics. It was the second fewest points allowed in a quarter in Miami Heat history, which is kind of crazy. Boston closed the third on 11-1 run to go up 18, and of course the rest was history. So the Celtics, you know, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, maybe, you know, going back and forth a little bit, maybe not too comfortable, but maybe that's the spark they needed, was a little bit of uncomfortableness and maybe a confrontation, and it'll spark a turnaround. The Jazz, the Utah Jazz beat down on the Hawks tonight. Jordan Clarkson had a bounce back game, 30 points. This is after scoring just 2 points on Tuesday, going 0 of 11 from the 3-point line. So he had his lowest output on Tuesday, his biggest output tonight. What stands out to you about this one?
Clarkson had missed 23 threes in a row, I believe was the stat before going off in this game. It's just how the NBA stats go in early season stretches.
23?
23 in a row, I believe, was the number that I heard. Yes.
That's insane.
I that was a broadcast stat, so I haven't actually myself. You know what happens with those sometimes. But I believe that's what I heard. He had missed 23 threes in a row. He was ridiculous in this game, 30 points, completely led the Jazz to go in this one. The Hawks continue to be a little befuddling to me. They look very different than last year stylistically, which is very strange. Not winning as many games as people would thought. Trae Young kind of not looking awesome so far to start the season. I'm not worried about the Hawks. They were really good last year for a reason, but I'm befuddled. I think that is the perfect word to describe Atlanta for me so far.
And Trae Young goes 0-4 tonight from the 3-point line. He did still put up 21 points with 7 assists. But do you think, I mean, one of the storylines I think is starting to creep up into conversation is the new rules. Who's struggling the most from the new rules? Do you think Trae Young is a guy? Would you blame that on some of these early season, this early season slump?
It's certainly an adjustment for all those guys who play like that. I mean, you practice how you behave based on a certain situation for so long. You ingrain that muscle memory in your head. Even if the rule is different, he can't just snap his fingers and change the way he reacts to a guy being on his hip after a screen or slight contact behind the 3-point line. So, yeah, I think it's a factor in all those guys, even if it's not necessary. Like, even if the only thing it's doing is making them take less free throws, like the way they just react to general on-court occurrences is different now. So, they have to adjust, and that's certainly a factor. And as a person who used to cover the Pacers, seeing an Atlanta Hawks team only shoot 28 threes despite having a ton of good 3-point shooters, Nate McMillan maybe should be a little more allowing them to shoot the ball from deep.
But I wonder, this is one of those knee bone connected to the thigh bone thing where if you're having a more difficult time breaking free on high screens and high pick and rolls, you're having a harder time collapse the defense and a harder time getting kick out threes. So I wonder if that's more of a symptom of, you know, Trae Young's being just slightly less effective. I don't know. I mean, we're only 8 games into the season, so I don't want to jump to too many conclusions. 8 game sample sizes can really mislead you, but it's at least something I have my eye on. And I also have my eye on it because Trae Young brought it up a week ago. He said, hey, these new rules, I don't know if I like them, guys. Like, he personally sort of admitted to it. Also tonight, he had a really interesting comment. So the Hawks have lost 4 of 5. They, of course, went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. He says, I think guys are learning that we're no longer the hunters. It's regular season. I'm not going to lie. It's a lot more boring than the playoffs. You got to find that motivation to play like the playoffs. I love that quote because it's refreshingly honest, first of all. But it's also true. You know, they were an Eastern they are coming off of what was certainly the high point emotionally and from an intensity standpoint for all of their careers. And here they are in October and November, and it's like, yeah, we're 70 games from the finish line. This maybe it's hard to get up for.
Yeah, that same thing we talked about with the Suns earlier too. You know what I mean?
That's right.
The boring tedium of okay, we're playing Houston tonight. Like that doesn't that their focus is not on the Houston Rockets. You know what I mean? It's very easy for guys to, I think, mentally breeze past a lot of this stuff. And I agree. I like the refreshing honesty from Trae Young. That said, again, I covered Nate McMillan for several years. I'm not sure how much he will respond to that.
We are contractually obligated to mention that the Utah Jazz look great. They have the NBA's best plus raw plus minus. They're beating everybody down. And they did this tonight, by the way. A Hawks, a very good team. They go on the road and get that win without Donovan Mitchell, who rolled his ankle yesterday. So an impressive win for the Utah Jazz. All right. The game of the night comes down to the wire against two juggernauts out west. The Oklahoma City Thunder and the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm just going to go ahead and spoil. I know you want to make this point, but I'm going to make it. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a superstar, and his pull-up three from the logo. So to set the stage, this was a back-and-forth game, especially in the fourth quarter. Thunder were down 19. They come storming back. It's a game in the second half all the way through. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, with 1 minute and 20 seconds left and about 20 seconds on the shot clock, walks the ball up court and decides just to launch it from the logo. 16 seconds on the shot clock still, Tony. He launches a three from 40 feet away, drains it. That might be one of my favorite shots I've ever seen.
It was like unbelievable. It was like the most, I think so far this season, that's my most yes shot I've seen.
Oh, to me it was yes. Like as soon as he pulled up, I honestly thought, was there a whistle I missed? Like it looked like, you know how there's a whistle and a player will just throw the ball.
Throw it up. Yeah.
That's what it looked like. I was like, what's he doing? And he just drained it from 40 feet.
He is not short of any confidence, and he controlled the game in the fourth quarter. The way the Thunder Lakers games go is just outrageous, and Shai is a big part of it. Like he just takes over against this Lakers team that has no one to defend well at the point of attack, and his skill set caters very well to thriving in these moments. And having a superstar moment against the Lakers in LA is just sick. And it was an awesome shot, and very deflating for the Lakers. What'd that make the lead? Five, I believe, at that time.
I think it made it six. I think they were up three, and then they go up six. I mean, but you're talking about an important, even up three with a minute 20, you're thinking, okay, every team's going to get about four more possessions, you know, with the way an end of game works. Every possession matters, and he just pulls up on the craziest shots I've ever seen. He was the best player on the court. This isn't hyperbole. He was
not even close to anyone else.
Best player on the court tonight, and featured Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis. LeBron, of course, took the night out. As we were told, you know, that's one of the values of having Russell Westbrook this year. LeBron can rest. No need to worry. He just rests LeBron all year and just skate right in. Well, Lakers still 5-4, so it's not like the sky is falling, but they have had the easiest schedule so far in the NBA. So I feel like going 0-2 against the Thunder, that might come back to haunt them.
Is this a hot take about the Lakers that Carmelo Anthony's been their second best player this season?
I mean, so he's crazy. He might make an appearance here later on in power rankings as I talk about him, but he's been on fire from the three-point line. And even tonight, he hit a couple big ones. Really, though, it's weird to say, he was the reason the Lakers hung around in this game.
Yeah.
Could have been a blowout, but he goes 5 of 10 from the three-point line for 21 points.
Including two huge clutch ones.
Some clutch ones just to keep it a game. So I don't know that it's a hot take, but I would say if you're the Lakers, you probably don't feel great about that fact. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say another big Shai moment to seal this game. I mean, late the Lakers, I think, were down one, and they had a foul opportunity, and Shai wiggles his way free, and Russell Westbrook decides to guard nothing. I don't really know what he was doing. If you find the clip of the defensive possession somewhere on the internet, you try to figure it out for me. Lou Dort wide open under the basket, and Shai just immediately reads the misplay on defense and gets the Thunder
Tony,
the bucket.
Tony, you're selling it short here. I mean, you're right. Like, I'm all for ragging on Russell Westbrook. He actually threw the ball out of bounds also on a fast break that could have tied the game. So he had a really rough fourth quarter here in this one. But the reason he decided to go and double the ball, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because he was dominant. There was a little bit of a, hey, anybody but him. And unfortunately, of course, they gave up the wide open dunk. I'm sure you didn't want to give that up. But that's how much Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was in their head down the stretch.
Yeah, it was an obvious foul. Like, shot clock was off. Like, you don't have to send anyone else. Just let Shai's man foul him. You'll get the ball back. But it was certainly a blunder from him, and the Thunder held on. Credit to them. They love these massive 20-ish point. This was 19, I think. 20-ish point comebacks against the Lakers.
They got some fun players. I love the new generation of players, man. And Shea's right up there atop the list. I mean, I watched Ja a bunch this week because Denver goes 0-2 against Memphis this week. But Ja Morant, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, there's just so many guys, this new class that they're dynamic, they're fun, they love to compete. That's the thing you like about them is they're not, you know, they did take every game personally in some way. And tonight, Shea clearly felt like, I'm in Hollywood, I'm going to put on a show. And he was up for that challenge. Let's take a break. On the other side, though, as we do every single Friday, we got a power rankings. And this time, Tony, power ranking, the five craziest stats. Early in the season, there's always crazy stats. I've got some crazy stats for you that you're not going to believe on the other side.
I love it. But before I get to hear your crazy stats, Adam, we got to talk about Built Bar because Thanksgiving is coming up. I love Thanksgiving. I'm an eater myself. Mm. And all the good foods and treats, there's plenty of them. But if you want a yummy dessert that's not so full of calories and sugar, it's the perfect time for Built Bars. It's the new holiday dessert. Feast on something delicious and feel good about it. One slice of pie that you might eat around the holidays has 300 calories, and that's on the low end. Most Built Bars are only 130 calories and only 4 grams of sugar that also have plenty of protein. You can replace that coconut cream pie with coconut Built Bar, or go for raspberry Built Bar instead of that raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any pie. They're all 100% covered in chocolate protein bars. They're delicious, low calorie, low carb, and they're a great option when you're hungry. Good meal replacement, good snack, whatever you want to do. You can share some at your family gatherings this holiday. It'll make things less awkward. New surprises all month for Built Bar, too. They got limited time flavors coming at Built.com regularly. So go check out the site often. And there's nothing like Black Friday, so mark your calendar. Black Friday will be a huge event at Built Bar with all sorts of surprises. Go to Built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, all one word. You'll get 15% off your order. That promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com.
Tony, I'm looking at the post-game presser from Shea here, and he was asked about that shot, and he said, I just felt it. I've never felt it like that. I've never been on a court and I'm like, you know what, half court, I'm just feeling it. I don't know. I'm just gonna,
you know, my basketball peak, I was 15, so I don't even know what feeling it is like at that age. A nice elbow jumper.
right. All right, it's Friday. You guys know we like to end this show having a little bit of fun. Power rankings, the silliest thing everybody does. Every single blogger, writer, journalist, analyst, commentator, talking head, radio personality, all does power rankings in some form, and they're all ridiculous. So we like to have a little bit of fun, and we make categorized power rankings. And this week, one of the things I love, Tony, I don't know if you love this as well, I love when people start citing net ratings and plus minuses and this or that 1 week into the season, because literally one three-pointer made or missed can change a team's net rating by like a full point at this point of the season. So I love when people start doing, this five-man combo has a net rating of plus 18. He played 7 minutes. Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's fun to look at the numbers early in the season too when they're like that. Like Justin Holiday plays for the team I cover, and he was really struggling from three. I think he was at 28%, and then he went 5 for 7 against the Raptors, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, he's a 40% three-point shooter again. Exactly. He did it, everybody.
Yeah. He's actually having his hottest season ever.
Yeah.
I've got some statistical anomalies. I only have one honorable mention. I had to cut it off, and partly because it's a little bit redundant. It'll make it a similar number will be on the list here. The Mavs have been outscored by 42 points this season. That doesn't sound that crazy on its own, but they're 5-3. They've been outscored by 42 points, and they are 5-3. One of the worst plus minuses in the NBA, but they have a winning record.
Did they get absolutely smashed in one of their losses? That's usually how those go.
I think in two of their losses, they got smashed. They lost by 30 to Denver, so that'll do it. That'll do it to you. But nonetheless, they are one of the least impressive 5-3 teams we've seen. But they were honorable mention. I've got to – it's a running bit here. I try to get Jokic onto this list at least once per show. He's always in the top five of any power ranking. The Nuggets have a plus 14.5 net rating with Jokic on the court, a minus 23 net rating with him off. That's a 37.5-point net swing. And here's what's crazy. The Nuggets with Jokic on, just raw plus minus, are a plus 77. For reference, the Utah Jazz, the number one team in the NBA in point differential, are overall a plus 101. So Jokic on the court, almost, the Nuggets are almost as good as the entire Jazz. But of course, they have a 4-4 record because they're getting absolutely murdered when he is off the court.
You know, when you don't have Jamal Murray and some other guys are off to a little slow starts, including a guy that I thought would be incredible this year, Michael Porter Jr. That's going to happen. You know, they need a little more when Jokic isn't in the game, and they haven't found it yet. I was succumbing to the belief that this would be the year Michael Porter Jr. would show that he's a top three shooter on the planet, and it hasn't happened yet. So unfortunately, Jokic has to carry the Nuggets more than I thought he would.
I had that exact take earlier this year. What a disaster that one has turned out to be. But it is early. He's another one. Maybe he goes 6-for-6, and like you said, he's back up to 40% or something.
Then he's having the best shooting season of his life again. Exactly.
It might have. Well, actually, hilarious, as we're on Jokic, he was asked, he's such an anti-star, he was asked this season like what he expects of himself, and he said, I have no idea. Might be the worst season I ever have. Might be the best. We'll find out.
Can I tell you a Jazz crazy stat while we're doing this?
Please do.
They're plus a billion, and they are averaging 17 assists per game, which is last in the league by over like 3 assists. Like, they're just self-creating a ton of good looks. It's weird. That's very unusual, especially for a Quinn Snyder team.
So that's actually an interesting story with the Utah Jazz. David Locke will love us for this, but they've actually reduced their pass rate every single season over the last 3 seasons. And by design, there is a correlation between more passes and more turnovers. You want to have purposeful passes, but you don't want to take a single pass extra. So Utah has purposefully cut down a little bit on their ball movement over the years and peaking this year. So an interesting stat, but one that actually has a purpose behind it. The next stat I have, so here I have number 4, another Nuggets one. The Nuggets have a top 5 defense and a bottom 5 offense. Another one of those ones you would not have pictured. Nikola Jokic, I think, has the 6th best individual defensive rating in all of the NBA. Up is down. Down is up. Left is right. Cats or dogs. What's going on here, Tony?
You tell me, Lockdown Nuggets. What is going on there? That's very surprising to me. I mean, I've only caught, I think, 2 Nuggets games this season, and they looked okay on defense. Can we just blame the Wilson ball for every weird stat at this point
of the season? And at altitude, the Wilson ball, there's something happened. We don't know. I think, honestly, one thing I have, look, it's probably just early season noise. Denver has been great defensively. Jokic in particular has been great defensively. But, you know, 8 games, we'll see what happens in the next 8, next 10. I do wonder, just as we talked about with Trae Young, the rule changes making maybe guards that really exploit minor contact, it has hurt them, this new physicality that's been injected into the game. I think it helps bigs, especially immobile bigs like Nikola Jokic, because he's a very good positional defender. He's very smart. He's got great hands. But just allowing the guards to be a little bit more physical out top means fewer guys are attacking him at full speed downhill. And I just wonder if that's if there's a correlation there. But the most likely answer, it's just early season noise.
That's not as fun, though.
It's not as fun. It's definitely
I can't write that. I can't put that in an article.
All right, number 3. These next 3 are very crazy. Who would you guess is leading the NBA in total points in the paint?
Oh, wow. Who drives a lot? I don't know.
Wizards? You might think it's like Davis or Joel Embiid, perhaps. Oh, or Rudy Gobert. Ja Morant,
wow.
All 180 pounds of him leading the NBA in points in the paint. Now, he always is up there at the top of it, but this year especially, just attacking the basket, attacking the rim, fearless, 360 layups, acrobatic layups. He is on, I got to say, if he is not in your top 5 most fun players to watch, I'm not sure you've watched enough of him. Your vote doesn't count.
Yeah, you know what's the best part about watching Ja this year is I think he finally worked on landing. Like in years past, he'd always land and it would scare you. This year, he's landing better.
I don't know that I could. Is this a real thing? I have not noticed it. He hit the ground like 20 times.
He's so acrobatic. You just talked about it, but he would land like on one leg.
Well, I know that
like,
part. I know he's crazy. Yeah, he's a crash machine.
He's landing on 2 feet more. I know it's stupid, but I don't want him to get hurt. He's awesome, so that's great. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Like, it makes sense why that is the case. That dude tries to put pressure on the rim in even stupid circumstances to do it, but he's so athletic that it works all the time, and Memphis is better for it. So unsurprising to me that is the case, but when you think of that stat, you don't think of a guard as a guy who would be dominating in the paint.
And they've just got so much space there, so many shooters. Of course, Jaren Jackson Jr. as well. He's operating with a wide open paint. Steven Adams, one of the best screeners in all of the NBA, if not the best screener. So it's kind of coming together for him. Number 2, Carmelo Anthony has the fourth most made three-pointers this season. Carmelo Anthony,
wow,
a good shooter, but you wouldn't guess the best shooter, and he is shooting 52%. He goes 50% tonight, 5 of 10. He was 52 coming in, so I guess it lowers a little bit on tonight's 5 of 10 performance. But I did not see that one coming. I thought he would be good as a spot-up shooter, but not 52% on volume.
Yeah, his reputation has not actually caught up to who he is still. Like, I still feel like people don't view him as an efficient player, but he's an excellent. He's been a pretty good three-point shooter in all of his Portland days. Obviously not a 50 to 60% three-point shooter in his Portland days, but
just the volume. I think that's the part that's so crazy. I mean, here's the top 3. Steph Curry, no surprise. CJ McCollum, Buddy Hield, Carmelo Anthony. The top 3, you would say, "Okay, those guys get hot, it's early." But Carmelo, he's got 32 made threes in 9 games. That's crazy.
Wow. Taking 6.4 a game prior to this Thunder game tonight where he took more than that. So his average certainly is higher than that now. Basketball Reference has failed to update for me. But it's fascinating to see him transform into this player. And you know, we joked all offseason, the Lakers don't have any shooting. Turns out they have the best shooter in the NBA.
So he actually, I guess that was only in 10 games in Houston, had fewer threes. I'm looking at this. In Denver, he had 2007 season, 40 total made threes. 2005 season, 42. So he'll pass that here in about a week. He'll pass 2 of his entire seasons with the Denver Nuggets. Pretty crazy. My number one stat, though, I referenced it earlier with the Mavs one. Luka Doncic, MVP candidate, has the second worst overall plus minus, raw plus minus.
Wow.
The Mavs have been absolutely destroyed when he has been on the court. Again, they're 5-3, and they do have a couple big losses. But Luka Doncic, the caboose of plus minus this season.
Yeah, so I'm assuming you were at this game where Denver completely smoked the Mavs with him on the floor. That certainly holds.
Aaron Gordon, it should be known. Aaron Gordon absolutely locked him up in that game. It was a second night of a back-to-back for Dallas.
These are some weird ones. Like I understand being minus 32 when you lose to the Nuggets by 31. That makes sense to me. But being a minus 17 when you beat the Spurs, that is certainly a little strange in terms of raw plus minus.
So wow. A really weird one. The Mavs, all of their numbers are very strange to start the season, but it's working out 5 of 3 at least so far. So begrudgingly so. Some bad signs, I guess you would say, from the Mavericks going forward. But again, you play to win the game. They're 5-3.
Can I tell you a stat I expected to be on your list that isn't?
Let me hear it.
The number one defense in the NBA belongs to who? Do you know?
I would have guessed Miami.
The answer is the Golden State Warriors.
I don't think that one's that crazy.
They have Draymond. It'll always be good. But I just, not that Steph's like a terrible defender, but him and Poole are not even average, and they don't have Clay yet. They have good defenders on the team. But number one, over the Heat, what they've been doing so far, I was very surprised they were that high up.
That's not what I think of the Warriors. You know, Andrew Wiggins, they got some guys on there. But I guess it is a little surprising that they're number one. Some of these West Coast teams, including the Lakers, are just off to a very soft schedule. We'll see how it happens when they have to
Wilson
head
ball. Don't worry about the schedule.
It's the Wilson ball. That's exactly what it is. Wilson ball on the West Coast. It just doesn't hit right. That does it for this week, guys. We hope you enjoyed the week of the NBA. We hope you enjoyed the entire week of Locked On NBA shows. And have a great weekend. We're going to be back again next week with shows Monday through Friday. And, of course, all of your favorite teams as well. Through hockey, through baseball, through football, through basketball. We got you covered on the Locked On Podcast Network. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next time.